Welcome to Ugeria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ugeria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ugeria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ugeria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. It's October 12th. This is Brad Culp. I'm here in the studio with Sam Grass and Lee Cantor. Good morning, gentlemen. How are y'all?
Doing well.
Doing real well. How are you, Brad?
I'm doing fine. Sam's probably in a good mood because his West Virginia team won yet again this past weekend.
He only talks about it when they win.
I don't bring it up. It's Brad who brings it up. Now, believe me, I'm one for jumping on the topic and riding it till it's bloody,
Are they going to join the SEC?
Boy, I don't know.
I think they can handle that.
I agree with you. I think that's a stretch. Now, I'm not saying they can't, but it's certainly going to be more difficult. And I'm just afraid they're going to get left out in the cold. To be honest with you,
no.
Yeah.
And Kevin's in a good mood because, of course, Boise State is still clinging to their number five slot.
What about your school, Brad?
You know, since my son's going to Baylor now, I can't help but
follow Baylor,
and they won last week. This week's going to be tough, though. They got A&M, which is a huge rivalry at College Station.
Hey, Kevin, just for your sake, you know the new rumor is that Boise State is looking to join the Big East. I love that.
Well, at least they're not looking to join the SEC. Well, we've got a great show today. Enough of that. We have in a moment, we're going to do Atlanta first today. In a moment, when we're done with Atlanta, we'll send it over to Kevin with Barry Teller from Aging with Hope. But right now we have in the studio with us Tanya Becker. Tanya is the founder and director of an organization called Arts for Alzheimer's. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm very well. It's nice to be here and be able to talk about Arts for Alzheimer's.
Well, we're thrilled that you're here. We're glad that you could take some time out of your schedule to be with us. Typically, the way we start our show is we just want to learn a little bit about our guests. And so if you wouldn't mind starting with telling us a little bit about yourself and where you grew up and maybe where you went to school and what you did prior to coming here, kind of the story of how you got here.
I'd be glad to. I was born on the North Shore of Boston and then spent my childhood in Paris. My family were in the diplomatic service, so I luckily got to travel around the world, which was fun and exciting. I came back to America when I was 10 years old and then lived in Manhattan for most of my life. And I sold real estate in Manhattan, which was quite an experience and great fun, and met lots of very exciting people. In 1987, I met a man from Atlanta who was a lawyer here, Kip Becker, and moved to Atlanta. And when I came here, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I wanted to do something, and I'd always dabbled in art, and I thought, well, I'm going to become an artist, which I did. And had a great career as an artist. And very sadly, about 7 years ago, he had knee surgery, and 5 days later, a blood clot, age 52, died. So there was a huge hole in my heart that needed to be filled with something wonderful. And that something wonderful is Arts for Alzheimer's. The way Arts for Alzheimer's came to be is kind of a very synchronistic and interesting story, I think. I read an article in the New York Times Magazine called Meet Me at MoMA, which was about the Museum of Modern Art having a program for people with Alzheimer's. And on Tuesdays, once a month, when the museum was closed, they would invite people with Alzheimer's and their caregivers to come to the museum. And I read it and said, oh, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have something like that in Atlanta? And in a very sort of mystical way, a week later, a friend called me and said, the Bremen Home is interested in doing an art program. Would you be able to help with it, et cetera? And at the time, I was president of the board of the Sproul Center for the Arts, which I was until this January. And we went to the Bremen home and talked, and with that, Arts for Alzheimer's was born. I went up to New York City to the Museum of Modern Art and worked with them on different aspects of it, but created Arts for Alzheimer's in our own fashion and the way it is. And the program is very interesting. I found that people with Alzheimer's are, when they first get the diagnosis, it is so clinical, and there's so much to learn and so much to do. And then they're living at home, and they have nothing else to do. And so I decided something must be done to help these people. There are 5.5 million people with Alzheimer's in this country, and 70% of them are taken care of at home. And there's very little activities for them. So once a week at the Sproul Center for the Arts, we have a class for people with Alzheimer's. And they come with their caregiver, and they create art. And what's amazing is the wonderful sense of self. The creative aspect of this is beautiful. And the sense of satisfaction that they get when I hold up their painting at the end of the class is amazing. It gives them what they lost. And to me, Alzheimer's, so much of it, people talk about the loss, the sadness of Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have to be about that. There is creativity in this world, and there is creativity for Alzheimer's people. And I've seen this over and over again. I was just part of an amazing program up at MoMA called a symposium that the Museum of Modern Art put on, and it was with some great brains that are researching Alzheimer's and wonderful, wonderful people. And what is happening and what they're finding, what research is showing, is that even though people have Alzheimer's, they are still able to learn new things. And this is what is going on with art. They are able to learn new things, and people who've never painted. I had a man who came to class and wasn't interested in art and thought it was a bit sissy-ish, and gave him a pencil, and he sat down and drew a Corvette. And I recognized it as a Corvette, and everybody was totally amazed, including him.
So these classes aren't just look at art. It's actually do art. They're actually doing things that are artistic.
That's right. These are hands-on classes. We have artist educators, which I've trained, who work individually with the person with Alzheimer's and help them if they need it. We really look for people with early stage Alzheimer's disease, and they are very much able to create art, and the work that they do is totally amazing. We have collage, we do watercolor, we work in pencils. There was an amazing lady who came in who couldn't hold a pencil. And a couple of weeks later, you couldn't take the pencil out of her hand. And she would go home, and in the afternoon, she created hundreds of pencil line drawings, repetitive lines that were just gracious and beautiful.
Are they more abstract typically, or do they draw actual things?
It depends. What we do is we have a centerpiece in the table that is filled with, for last week, for instance, the theme was autumn. And so it was leaves and pine cones and branches and everything that would represent autumn to you. So it's a visual stimulation for them. And then they would come, and perhaps one of them would draw a pumpkin. And you can tell it's a beautiful pumpkin, and use watercolor and color it in. Somebody else just might make a couple of lines and then just put some watercolor, and it's a beautiful abstract painting. Each one is a masterpiece in its own self. And the satisfaction that they get out of seeing themselves able to do something, to create something, is amazing. But it's also amazing for the caregiver, because the caregiver comes, and I put them separately in the side of the room, and they talk to each other, and they help each other, and they have ideas for each other. So it gives them a sense of community. and a respite for an hour and a half of having to take care of their loved one. But at the end, they share so much in the satisfaction in that their loved one has been able to create something, and they're just as proud. And so
is the Alzheimer's sufferer, or is there a sense of pride when they're done?
Like, absolutely. Absolutely.
So you see their face light up, like you see the room kind of just get all excited for each of their creations?
Absolutely. It's beautiful. I think there isn't a Friday morning that goes by that I'm not in tears with something over there. We had one lady who came in, and the first week she came, at the end, I held up her painting, and everybody applauded, and she burst into tears, and she said, "Nobody's ever done that for me." So wow. It's very beautiful.
You said a few minutes ago that people with Alzheimer's can learn new things. Do you think that it's easier for them to learn things that are kind of right brain oriented rather than left brain oriented, or do you think that new learning ability applies on both sides?
I'm not sure. I've mainly worked with the art, and I think one of the things about art, it is something we learn as a child. So it's that sort of first in, last to go
right.
principle.
And long-standing memories.
And long-standing memories, because the first thing you do as a child is you pick up a crayon and you take it to paper. So that part is there. And it's beautiful to watch.
Mm. Now, do you ever have students in the class that get frustrated, and how do you handle that when they get frustrated?
Yes, we do have that from time to time. What's amazing to me is that sometimes they come and they don't want to paint, and they just want to use it to talk to somebody. And they'll either talk to each other, or they'll talk to one of my artist educators, and they'll spend the whole hour talking. But they're happy. We've given them a meaningful activity. We've engaged their mind, and they're socially engaged. And how more wonderful is that to see this whole room of people happy and engaged? The Alzheimer's Association has been with me through the beginning on this wonderful project. And Suzette Binford from the Georgia chapter is there every week with me. And I have to tell you that I think the Alzheimer's Association is one of the greatest nonprofits I have ever worked with. I have tremendous admiration for their dedication, the going that extra mile. They just are a superb organization, and they've been so helpful in this. Arts for Alzheimer's is now growing. I'm very excited to say that the Columbus Museum in Columbus, Georgia, will be opening Arts for Alzheimer's in January. And I have asked the department from the Museum of Modern Art to come down and introduce the program. So they will be coming down in January to introduce the program, and they will do a one-day workshop. So at the Columbus Museum will be art looking and art making. So that will involve both sides of art.
Neat.
You said something earlier as the value of having Alzheimer's as far as it relates, and you may use the word social, and I think that hits the nail exactly. These people have a tendency, once they're diagnosed, to isolate, and in fact, in my view, and in doing many shows in relationship to this, it should be just the opposite. And I think that, and not only for those individuals that are suffering with Alzheimer's, but as you said, for the caregivers, it has to do with socialization. That's a great, great avenue.
Typically on a Friday morning, how many people do you have in the class?
Anywhere from 5 to 18.
Wow.
One of the things I've done is the classes are offered free of charge to people with Alzheimer's who are living at home. And one of the things I've done is I feel that the caregivers have enough shoulds on them, so I don't make them let me know if they are coming or not.
So they just can show up?
They just show up.
Are you...
Now, don't, don't let listeners just they have to call and talk
okay,
to me.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, I can see, and just from Brad and our efforts and with who we see on a weekly basis, I can see this being a tool for our caregivers, and I just want to be clear that you're open to that idea.
No, people have to call me.
Where did they get, like, the materials? Is that all that donated, or you provide all the... Because that starts getting expensive, I would imagine.
It's not that expensive. I offer the classes free of charge at the Sproul Center for the Arts, and I have provided the materials.
Wow.
So... Arts for Alzheimer's is not for profit. You know, we were discussing this a little bit earlier, and I understand there's some technicalities there. But how are you supported? I mean, is this just something that you do personally, or are there people that join with you that may financially support your organization?
I predominantly it's supported by me. And I've had some donations, wonderful donations along the way.
So it's if one of our listeners were interested in donating, there would be a way for them to do that?
There most certainly would. I would be most grateful for that.
Now, you know what I find fascinating is that you started this without a personal connection to Alzheimer's. There was no family member or loved one that was going through this. This is just something you read about and you decide to get involved? Because that's a little different
that
than most of the
different
stories that
yeah.
we get in here.
Very true. I had never met anybody that I knew had Alzheimer's, or nobody in my family, knock on wood, had Alzheimer's. And it was totally from reading this magazine article that I just felt this need to do it. Mm. And when I met these people and met their caregivers, I was transformed. The love that the caregiver has for the person with Alzheimer's is one of the most beautiful things I think I've ever seen in my life. That caring, that being there for them through thick and through thin is just so beautiful and heartwarming to see. Mm-hmm. And if you ever need to know about what love is, come see one mm-hmm. of my Arts for Alzheimer's mm-hmm. class.
So before we started the show, you were talking about a new aspect to your organization. Tell us about that.
In working with these people with Alzheimer's, the caregivers to me are the unsung heroes. They go through so much, they do so much, and they get into such overwhelm and they get frantic. And I thought, there's got to be a way to help them. There's got to be a way to perhaps have a program that they can sign up for, a weekly program and some workshops, et cetera, that would help them be centered, that would help them with what they need to do, perhaps legally, what they need to do emotionally, what they can do to refill the well, help them with journaling about some aspects that are difficult for them. And so I'm going to start a new program that will help the caregiver. And it's still in my head, but it's getting closer and closer. And it may be, as I may start out with just a blog on the Arts for Alzheimer's website, but it will grow from there.
That sounds terrific. It's certainly an area that's much needed, as Sam alluded, in our business, you know, our caregivers. They work hard. They have a very difficult job. They're immersed in this day to day, and even though they're paid for it, they struggle with some of the same issues that a family caregiver would struggle
it's
with.
It's that burnout, right?
Yeah.
To get them, they need these breaks, this kind of mental vacations that they can get at a museum. It's so inspiring, and yeah. just walking around yeah, there has got to be a nice
and somebody that can understand where they're coming from and what their needs are beyond the clinical.
Right.
Needs.
Yeah. I mean, it becomes
kind of a support group,
right.
In a way. These
right.
when you gather them, you're doing the art for the Alzheimer sufferers, and then all the caregivers can kind of, you know, talk amongst themselves and kind of vent and kind right. of just kind of take a break, but with people that are all in the same boat.
Yeah. I my sense and my experience with this is that the patients as well as the caregivers initially have a tendency to believe that. They are in this by themselves, that this is unique to them. And once they understand that they're not in this boat alone, that there are a number of people out there that are experiencing virtually the same thing, then that becomes a real tool for the patient, the caregiver.
I do have another question for you. If some of our listeners, the people that listen to the show, it's a wide variety of from clients to caregivers to other professionals in the senior services industry. If some of our listeners wanted to be involved on more of a volunteer basis as opposed to giving money, is there a way for them to get involved?
Absolutely. I look for people that I can train as artist educators who must be willing to donate their time to volunteer for the art classes at Sproul. I have not expanded the program as of yet, but I think it will be eventually to caregivers who are taking care of people in nursing homes or as a service that you offer. But right now, it's just for people who are willing to give up their time and volunteer for Sproul. This
Sure.
will expand. I also might say that I'm looking for somebody who will help me grow this program. It's just me doing this, and it's getting overwhelming, and it's getting big, and it's getting exciting, and I just am thrilled with everything that's going on, but it's just getting too big for me. I mean, you know, I've had CNN do a program. It went all over the world. I had calls from all over the world. Fox News did a program. ABC did a program on it. So it's been very, very rewarding and exciting, but it's just a little too much for one person. So if anybody wants to help, I'm looking for co-founders or whatever to grow this program.
That's exciting. Let me jump back quickly to the Sproul Center for Arts. So what I heard you say is that you would want somebody to give you a call to chat about this prior to showing up, but and we'll take your number at the end. But where is the Sproul Center for Arts located? And I also heard you say Friday mornings, I think. So
right. The classes are Friday mornings at Sproul. And I require that people call me. The classes sometimes are full, and you may be on a waiting list, but you can't just show up. The classes are in Dunwoody at the Sproul Center for the Arts, and the people that we want in the class are early-stage people with Alzheimer's who are living at home. We cannot do nursing homes, assisted mm-hmm, sure. livings, or anything like that. They've wanted to bring busloads in, and I just can't do it.
Right.
So it's just people living at home.
What time on Friday mornings? Does it vary?
It.
Okay. All right.
So then the process, do you kind of counsel with the family first to determine appropriateness of
exactly.
a student?
Exactly. Okay. And so I require people call me so that we can chat about it and see if this is something that will work for their loved one and for me.
And then once they're approved for the program, they can show up as they wish.
Absolutely.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. As we kind of wrap this up, just wanted to ask you if you had a piece of advice or counsel for family members that are dealing with a loved one that may be newly diagnosed to Alzheimer's. What, you know, given what we've been talking about, what advice might you give that family?
Find creative ways of reaching them. Instead of looking at the things that are lost and will no longer be there, find different creative ways of making new pathways in your life with them. All the memories are still there. The memories aren't gone. They just, you have to find a new portal, a new way to reach them. And if you take time and go gently about it, you will find wonderful new avenues that will be very enriching to you and to them.
That's a great piece of advice. I think if I can rephrase a little bit, so focusing on what they can do, not what they can't do. and try to remain positive and seek that other outlet, that other portal for expression. That's terrific. Thank you. For our listeners that might want to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
They can reach me by telephone at 404-492-6181. And my email address is Tanya, T-A-N-I for India, A, at arts, A-R-T-S, for the number four, Alzheimer's.com.
And is there also a website with the same name?
Yes, there is.
So www.arts, number four, Alzheimer's.
With no apostrophe.
.com. All right. And let's see, I guess that's it. We got email, we got phone, we've got a website. Tanya, thank you so much for being with us. It was great information, and what an exciting program.
Thank you both so much for having me. I think this is a wonderful radio program, and thank you for letting me share.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing how you grow.
Thank you.
At this point, we're going to go over to Dallas with Kevin and his guest, Barry Teller, with Aging with Hope. Kevin?
All right. Thanks, Brad and Sam. I have with me today in Dallas Barry Teller. He's with Aging with Hope. Barry, I really appreciate you taking the time today to come and chat with us about what you do. And why don't we start off by having you just kind of give your background, maybe where you're from, where you went to school, how you came to do what you do now.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Sure appreciate having the opportunity to share with you. I grew up in Mississippi, just right on the Mississippi River, and that's something that never gets out of you. Blood. It's just quite it's important for me to return there quite a bit, and just moved to Texas in the 70s. So I've been in Texas most part of my life, and all my kids were raised in Texas, and got involved. I was in business till the late 80s, and then went back to school and got my degree in counseling, and then that's been the kind of the catapult for my starting the career that I'm involved in now. Did therapy for 8 or 10 years, and then coaching, the industry of coaching came up to me, and so that's what I've kind of focused on, and really appreciate its perspectives and the way it helps people. And so mainly what I'm involving now is really focusing on the senior communities and just wanting to share with them ways and perspectives where they can change, just look at their lives in a way that's positive and focuses on what they can do. A lot, our culture typically in the United States doesn't look upon seniors in a favorable way. Typically, it's a lot of other cultures have a very high regard and honor for seniors and their wisdom and experience, and I hadn't seen that much in the United States.
Right, right. So what are some of the specific programs that you offer for seniors?
Mainly presentations and workshops that just really bring people together. And that's one, there's so much value or power in group work, because there's so much people have. Typically, that one of the coaching aspects is just trusting that we all have our own inner answers, that nobody else really can. We can guide and help somebody else, but it's for us to think we have an answer for somebody else. Usually it's not. It may be right, but the odds are it's, without knowing exactly what their desires are and what their values are, it's better to just really help them to come at that by themselves. So with group activity, you have all the people there, and there's just so much value in the sharings, and that's one of the things I've felt blessed about, is just being able to facilitate that. And not a lot of speakers I've listened to just seem to want to have the pulpit the whole time, or be talking all the time, and you can certainly share information that's helpful that way, but if you get the group working together and then also if they're in a community, then it's really initiates a supportive nature to the whole community, where people are realizing that we don't have to do things by ourselves, that we do have this support of other people and make those interconnections.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Now, what are some of the specific things in these group sessions that you talk about and you kind of focus on?
They would be mainly what I kind of mentioned, Roy, is just that trusting that inner, you know, that we do have our answers and that it's pretty much our, it is our responsibility as an individual to nobody. I love the old term, or there's a statement about gurus, and I think a lot of people, a lot of us are looking for a guru to help us out, and we just think we sure, you know, would like somebody else to deal with whatever it is. And there's, when you spell it out and as a sentence, G-U-R-U, it's G-U-R-U, and there's nothing else.
That's great. That's great.
It really is neat to me.
Yeah. So for people who may not be familiar with that type of setting and what coming into something like that would look like, can you kind of give us an idea of what somebody would expect if they came to one of your workshops?
Okay, yeah, we just would gather and just have a rapport building time where just people have that time to, you know, just get to connect with each other. And a lot of times, even if you have people that are in a community, you'll find that they haven't made those efforts to make a sincere, intimate connection with each other. So that'd be at the beginning of it. And then just some awarenesses, or bringing out the awarenesses for people, excuse me, that, you know, that they're, some of these things I've already mentioned, just that they're not alone, that, you know, just kind of educate them on what we think are some of the important things, and just that they have resources, and then maybe we get into the resources later on, and I provide, you know, before I leave. But usually I don't have them. I often have to email them later or send them back, because there'll be questions that come up during the process that I'm not sure maybe who would be the best for them to have access to. So I follow up with that. But just that there are resources, and then also within a lot of these, there's some phenomenal senior communities that we're involved with, and those have great resources, and a lot of times it's just people don't know that, or just aren't aware that they're available.
Right, right. What are you finding are some of the hot button issues right now that are coming out of these workshops, really, you know, the most common things?
A lot of it is, and it's been a focus or intention of mine, is just how to, with their adult children, in a senior community, you've got, you know, adult children involved, and you're in different levels with the seniors that, you know, they may have just retired or just then starting to have some, you know, physical issues or health issues. And so it comes, that becomes a big part of the relationships that they're having, is how to work well with their, you know, with their kids, and to be, you know, honoring and respectful of them, but also set, you know, be real clear on what's important for themselves, and to set, a lot of it's about boundary work, and just people really having clear boundaries, and to have a good boundary, you have to know what your values are, and so that's a big part of what we bring out is get the, and you're not, typically one sessions, you're not going to come up with that. It's a process. Like when I do coaching with an individual, I often, or almost all the times, we'll make a 3-month commitment, and it's takes that.
Wow. So how long do the group sessions usually last? Are they like a full day, or?
No, well, I do have some, I'm working on some that way. Right now I'm just kind of introducing myself into these communities. So, I've been hearing that they, you know, want them brief, or a lot of times on
right.
These initial ones, they just would like them brief. And so I've been, you know, an hour, you know, time, which is, it's just an introductory situation. And so, you know, in these, you know, once you can have a week or two later, have some follow-up, or even if it's a month or two, follow-up sessions, it's so important. And I obviously, I'm wanting to have a commitment by the communities to give me, you know, I'd love to have, you know, a month or two at least for, mm-hmm. And then they can decide.
I imagine it's important to, during that full process, have the same group of people there so you keep that rapport built. And
yeah, it's hard to keep that in these circumstances, but that's ideal, because there is a trust level that you're working with, and that's what, you know, I'm from the beginning, and that's one thing I've been successful in, just because in it I couldn't have done, you know, 15 years ago I couldn't have done it, or 20 years ago, because I wasn't very trustworthy myself. You know, that's been a big part of my process of, you know, in school and then in therapy myself and coaching and counseling. It's been a journey for me to really know myself and then start being able to share that with others and or have that as part of my presence.
Yeah, yeah. Could you have any specific stories of how people have really benefited from what you do?
Yeah, a couple there. One in particular that just is or tickles me that the way it evolved. But I was working with a group of elder men. Now they were all in their 90s, and this was just a group that company had asked me to, you know, be involved with. And in the process, one of the guys, and I can't remember his name at the time, but he just brought it up that this is so interesting about human nature. He brought it up that, you know, when he was 12, 13 years old, he wanted to play the violin. And and we were talking, that's what brought it up, is I was asking, what are they passionate about? What do you really love doing? And, you know, because we're searching for that, to do that right now, or focus on that to help other people do it. And so he brought up this violin thing. But what happened is his dad just didn't think that was good. And so he, you know, just pushed it down or wouldn't let him do it. So and it was a rebellion thing. He said, well, the heck with this, I'm not going to play. You know, he just didn't do music, period. And for that's 80-something years, he'd been holding on to this hurt, you know, kind of a lack that he wanted or something that he wasn't doing for himself. And he, when I left, he was going to, he already, and that's what's so interesting. He'd been, he knew where the music store was. He'd been in there. He'd looked at this thing, but he had never thought about buying a violin. It just didn't come up for him. And he was heading to, you know, it wouldn't have been that day, but in the next couple of days, go get a violin. And he probably drove everybody crazy, screeching on the, like Jack Benny or something on the violin. but it just was so exciting for me to, and the other guys, they got, and then they brought out things that they had, not maybe, that was a pretty substantial situation for me.
So do you find that a lot, that there's a lot of those things that they wanted to do when they were younger that for whatever reason they suppressed, and now they, because of what you're doing, are able to kind of pursue those?
Yes, and I think it's, you know, what I'm doing is just reminding them of their, you know, what their values are and helping them really focus on those and to get excited about them, to be, you know, to know, and to know they can do it, you know, that they, a lot of us, for, I know I went 40-something years of just allowing other people to run my life, you know, and it wasn't, you know, people cared about me and, you know, they meant well, but it wasn't, what they were wanting me to do wasn't, you know, what I wanted to do. So you have this conflict within yourself.
I think that happens with the best of us, that we give our power to other people and allow them to influence us, whether they mean to or not. It's just, it just happens.
Exactly.
So what do you find most rewarding about what you're doing right now?
That would be a piece of it, is just seeing people become themselves. It's kind of mirrored back what you're saying. Because until we're doing that, we're not on the track. We're on somebody else's track. And a lot of us, I remember Ted Turner in an interview a long time ago, and must be one of the wealthiest guys hanging around this planet, and owns most of Montana and Arizona, sounds like. Some guy was saying, well, what was his driving force, you know, to be successful? And he said, well, my dad. He said, my dad's, you know, just trying to impress, or just, you know, to live up to my dad's standards. And he's in the interview, knew his dad had been, you know, deceased for years. And he still, you know, that was still his driving force. So a lot of times it is our parents, and they mean well and love us, but it's just like the violin story. You know, father just couldn't see his son, maybe because he didn't like the violin, whatever the reasons are.
Yeah. Well, it's great that what you're doing is helping people who are 80 years old or older kind of unlock those things and live more fulfilled lifestyles, even as seniors.
It's exciting to me. And like I said, you know, at the beginning, our culture doesn't look, we really are, what I've heard said, and I think it's pretty true, you know, if you're not producing, you know, when you retire in that age frame, you're not producing. Typically, you know, and a lot of people are nowadays, because we don't, retirement probably is going to be taken out of the dictionary. But we've, you know, just are the society sees us as over the hill. We've raised our kids. We've done our job as in a lot of, you know, as a CEO or as a producer or whatever involvement. And then it's over, you know, unless you really come up with your own desires and passions that, you know, a lot of us think, well, you know, what's next? And I had a lady that, and it wasn't in a counseling session, it was just in a social setting, that I mentioned that. I was really told about the, I just said sometimes people just feel like they're just waiting around to die. You know, they've gotten to this stage and they don't, there's, what else is there? And she was, this is a very attractive woman. At, she was in her mid-50s. And she just looked right at me and she said, that's what I'm doing. Wow. And I was shocked at that because she's got grandkids and kids that love her and she's got a good job and whatever. But she just, that's, you know, it's all in our perspective. And if we don't honor and get excited about ourselves, we, there isn't much, even no matter what age.
Yeah, yeah. What are some of the communities that you're doing these in? Currently,
mainly now, and with coaching, as far as the individual coaching, it's mostly on the telephone. So
okay.
I do that with, I can, I'm not limited, you know, I can do that anywhere in the United States. But my focus, since I live here, and I do have, there's some homes back in Mississippi that I have connections with, but mainly would be Dallas, Fort Worth area, and then the Jackson and Vicksburg, Mississippi, as far as physically going to, but I want to, I'd like to expand that. I've got friends in, you know, different parts of the country that, you know, I'm just, like, I'm trying to go to Mobile, Alabama in the next few weeks and just do it, just a little brief session there just to have fun with, you know, the community, one of the senior communities down there.
Okay. If you had a piece of advice that you could give to seniors or their adult children, what would you tell somebody that came to you and said, you know, I just need one piece of advice, one gem to take back, what would you say?
It's to be yourself. It, you know, it's real. It gets down to some real simplistic way of looking at things, and that's, saying that is not, you know, you've got to know yourself first, mm-hmm. to be yourself. So, it, but that would be it, and to honor yourself. That's what often happens, like with adult children and their parents. You have these. It almost gets into like passive aggression, where you just, you know, kids, there are a lot of kids, even though they might be in their 40s or 50s, or adult kids, children, they're still, you know, still have the dynamics of when they were 8 years old and their father scolded them about something.
Yeah.
And so that comes into play. And so until they really let go of those things, they're dealing with it like they're an 8 year old and, you know, the father's in another situation, so that you get these resentments and angers that come out, whereas if you really get to where you're on equal basis of being true to yourself and honoring yourself, you, then you're going to share things that honor you, but also honor the other person, because then you have that ability.
Yeah. If our listeners wanted to get in touch with you and find out more about what you have to offer, how would the best way for them to do that be?
Yeah, the best way just would, I've got, my email is just barry@barryteller.com. It's BARRYTELLER. And then I do have a website, or really it's right now on Facebook. We hadn't finished producing the website itself, but it's Aging with Hope. And just with, if people are familiar with Facebook, you just have the Facebook address in it, and then just put a /, and then Aging with Hope, and that'll take you to, and probably I think if you search just under my name too, that okay. takes you to it.
That's great. Barry, again, I appreciate you coming on and talking with us about the programs you're offering. They sound fantastic, and I think that what you offer is a very valuable resource to our seniors as well as our children.
Well, thank you so much, and this is a great opportunity to spread the word and to connect with you. I really appreciate, from what I'm learning about the station here, it sounds wonderful what y'all are presenting to the United States. I guess it's the world when you look at the internet. So.
That's right. That's right.
For sure.
All right. Well, again, Barry, thank you. And with that, we'll send it back to the studios in Atlanta.
We certainly thank you, Barry, for being our guest. Kevin, thanks for hosting the Dallas section. And as we always say, that's kind of it for today. It was great information, Barry. Thanks again. We want to remind our listeners that if they wish to listen to a rebroadcast of today's show, they can do so at eugeriaradio.com. We once again thank all of our guests. And as we always do, we close with the saying that if the youth of this nation is its greatest national resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you and God bless.
Ujiria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.